This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and everyone who dreams about writing. And I have so many of you. Welcome to Joy on Paper because this is a really special show. I am telling you, it's first of all, I'm coming from glorious Clearwater, Florida, which everyone knows is always so beautiful, except today. It's raining like crazy. But I am in a really great mood because I have back on Joy on Paper by popular demand. As a matter of fact, it's so popular, I'm going to have to ask them to do me a favor because I have today the masters of the pitch. It's called, their book is called Pitch Like Hollywood, What You Can Learn from High Stakes Film Industry. And the authors are, well, I don't know, they sound like a vaudeville team, but it's Peter Desberg and Jeffrey Davis. Hi, Peter. Hi, Jeffrey.
Morning.
Good morning.
Okay. And when I say popular demand, I am saying my listeners love you. They, you know, writers today live in this dream of having their books turned into streaming video. Not so much feature films anymore, you know, because those are hard to get. But there's the hope with streaming video. And so I have all these authors, and by the time I got home from the show when you were on before, by the time I got home, I already had like 10 emails from listeners saying, please, please, why don't you have them on every week? I said, well, you know, then we're going to have to rename this whole program, but you guys are terrific, and I just want to tell you, I think you've had an enormous impact, I'm sure, with all writers across the country who have gotten this book, and if they haven't gotten this book, they have to get it.
Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate that.
And I want to thank you so much for your lovely blurb that you gave me, because I just celebrated last week the 7th anniversary of Joy on Paper, and you gave me such a
congratulations.
Oh, it was so sweet of you. I really appreciated it. And so I went back, and I had not read the blurbs that you got before. I never do. I never read the blurbs. I never read reviews of books because I don't want it to influence me. But I must mention one that I really love. And this is from the dean of the School of Film and Television. And he writes, a joy to read. So I like that. So what are you guys going to tell us today? Because I wasn't able to open the lines to have my listeners call in today. Didn't have time to organize it. But they did send me in questions. And so I'm going to give you a few of the questions. And sometimes you can just tell right, you know, the chapter where the answer is. But some of the questions are unusual. So let's start first, an overall look at the book. Pitch Like Hollywood is a really important book nowadays because this is something that people are looking for. And it's not just pitching for film or, you know, for your book, but also just in business, people have to get out there and sell themselves.
Correct.
Absolutely. And, you know, the very first point that we love to talk about is pitching is not the same as selling. And that the goal always in a pitch is to start a conversation.
So tell people how exactly they do that. How, you know, here's a question from one of my listeners. So she is working on she's finished her first book and she's going to be publishing it. You know, she's way ahead of the game. And she's not ready to pitch, but she's eager to learn. And she asked an interesting question. She said, once I, you know, master the pitch like Hollywood book, and she got your book, and she's going through it chapter by chapter and trying to understand how to, the arc of how to make this pitch. Do you want to explain that?
Go ahead, Peter.
You know, this idea of a conversation in selling the picture you always get is somebody is talking at you, telling you what you should want, telling you what you should do, telling you why something is important. And the biggest difference is that in a conversation, you listen. And it's in the listening that you find out the information that really helps you with what you're trying to do. I think last time we gave the example of our friend Lynn Grigg, who was a young advertising person. And I feel like, stop me if you've heard this one. But it's just such a good story that it's worth mentioning briefly. Again, that she was a young advertising woman just starting out, and went out with her manager. They pitched a tire company. They said, we've come up with 6 different ad campaigns. They pitched them, and then the person said, I hate everything you've shown me. And she was just absolutely paralytic with fear. But her art director was wonderful, and he looked at the fellow and said, tell me which one you hate the least. And what he did was he opened up a conversation. He got the person to start saying, well, here's what we're looking for, here's where you missed. And it let them start to exchange ideas, and that's where they came up with the right pitch, which eventually sold it. And it was the listening that did it.
Well, you know, for authors, so many are told that you have to have this 3-minute elevator pitch, and if you have that down perfectly, that is going to lead you to a deal. What do you think about that idea?
I don't think it's that simple. You know, there are this is my experience that sometimes you'll get that 60 to 90 second opportunity, but and sometimes they'll want you to come in and start there. But again, I go back to what Peter said. In our experience, you're not just going to walk in, sit down, and start pitching. They know something about you, or you wouldn't have gotten the meeting to begin with. But I think that, you know, it's good to have that capacity, but I think that, you know, it depends on what business you're in. In show business, you have to have a lot more than the short pitch. And there'll be a number of sessions. And one of the things we found out in our interviews is that there isn't just going to be one meeting, unless you come in and start pounding on them and selling. It's going to be a series of meetings. So I think that elevator pitch idea, while good to have, I think it's been overblown in terms of its usefulness. That's my experience. Peter may have more to add about that.
I think Jeffrey's exactly right. But I remember a wonderful interview that we did with Lucas Carter, who's a very successful writer. And one of the things he points out is that you want to capture their imagination right at the beginning. The example he gave us was, if I'm pitching a movie idea, I don't start with, Bob woke up one morning, he went in the bathroom, brushed his teeth, combed his hair, dressed very carefully, walked outside, and then he said, you've got to start out with, Bob got up, walked outside, and saw the meteor crashing toward the earth. that you want to capture their imagination right away because you want to get them interested. But one of the points that Jeffrey always makes is you want to engage them, you want to get their curiosity going, and you want to make sure that you're always holding something back a little bit that they want to know so that they're sitting there saying, what happens next? Because it's their curiosity that's going to drive what happens.
Well, you know, I mentioned... go ahead.
Oh, please. No.
Now, I mentioned that when I went to Hollywood, and I had three of my films optioned. I mean, optioned and full-page ads in The Hollywood Reporter, which, you know, it's pretty thrilling. I was young, and it was very thrilling. And looking back at it, I realized, and after I read your book, I realized why it happened is that instinctively I was following your game plan because I had no experience in film, but I was a businesswoman. I had owned, at that point, I owned 8 stores in England. So when I went to Hollywood, actually, when I talked to people, I talked more about my business in England than I did about my films. And that's what really got me, you know, into the door, I think.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely. I mean, who wouldn't rather be in England than Hollywood?
Well, I had a lot of stories, and I think your idea here that you to tell people have a story to go with. Too many people have over the past really, and you know, I've been doing this program 7 years, and the first time I really was told, you know, you absolutely have to have this elevator pitch, and I realized that I never had an elevator pitch, and people were struggling and would come to me and they say, I'm trying to write an elevator pitch, I need to log line, I can't do this, I'm not never get a log line, I can write the whole book but I can't write a log line, and they get so scared and they are so frustrated.
There's a lot of pressure to come up with a good log line.
Go ahead.
And that the way Hollywood books talk about it, it's almost like being a magician. That's the key that unlocks every door, with this one sentence or two sentences that gives you the essence of the book that makes them want to know more. But again, I think you want to get people curious about you. The whole purpose. When I hear the word elevator, whether it's an elevator story or an elevator pitch, it's always about how do I become memorable in terms of the people that I'm talking to. And again, what you want to be thinking about, I had an interesting experience years ago. Do you remember who John Scully is?
Oh, sure.
Okay, so I got to interview John Scully, and at one point I said, hi, John, how come you're such a good presenter? And he said, I don't think of myself as a good presenter, but I do have an MBA in marketing, and what they taught me was find out what your audience wants to know and tell them. And it seems like such a simple, straightforward idea, but... I mentioned before that I work with people who have stage fright. And whenever they come to me saying, I've got to make this big presentation, here's what I want to get across. And they miss the point that they don't start out with, here's what the people I'm going to talk to really want to know. And how can I give it to them? So again, if you're pitching a story idea or you're pitching a movie idea, you're trying to think, if I'm pitching an executive, what is that executive concerned about?
Yeah.
What are the issues that he or she is going to be really looking for? And so I have to structure my pitch around that.
Right.
And so again, you know, the number one word that always pops up is, how do I invoke their curiosity? How do I get their involvement? Right. How do I make them want to know more?
Mm-hmm. You know, what I what I think is so right, and what Peter's saying is, you know, I'll talk in a minute about the other elevator story, which is what I think Peter was leading to. But I just want to say that what I tell my students all the time, because I am privileged to work with young people who are very open and curious and want to know about how things have changed, and that is to do your homework. I think we maybe talked about this before, Patsy, but I think people go into a pitch and all, you know, they go in, especially in business, you know this better than we do, they go in with PowerPoint and all of these. I remember when I was working in advertising, there were these large research boxes, and the creative director would always just throw them out and say, that has nothing, we can't use those. I don't care how much research they did. You have to know who you're pitching to. You have to know everything they've done, what they like, what they don't like, what you don't want to mention. One of the things that was a painful experience for them. We give examples of that in the book. And I just say a couple of words about the other kind of pitch, which I think goes to Peter's, your question about how do you open a conversation. And that is that everybody ought to have a story about how they first fell in love with whatever business they're in. And it doesn't, and it should, and what we've found is it should never be a story about you being the hero. And so that's the other elevator story that very few people talk about or learn to do. But that's, I think that's a really good way to open a conversation if someone asks you about yourself. Have that ready, but be authentic about it. Just early out here, I almost said, go ahead.
No, I think Jeffrey is right on the money here. And again, this idea of making yourself memorable is real important. years ago, a management company sent a young woman to me and said, she just released her first album on Motown, and she sings and dances up a storm, 21-year-old girl, really talented. And he said, and then one day after she finished performing, a reporter walked up and stuck a mic in her face and said, tell me about yourself. And all of a sudden it sounded like, excuse me. And what she did was she gave her a little list of things that she had done. You know, when I was a little girl, I was singing in the church choir. I sang in my high school choir. We had a girl group. All stuff that's really forgettable. And when I was talking to her, I said, well, you know what? Let me tell you about my daughter. She sings and plays piano and cello. She goes to school and so-and-so. And she said, I see what you mean. You're giving me a list of things that only a mother would be proud of. And I said, okay, give me another chance to tell you about my daughter. Came home one day, and she's outside pacing back and forth with tears in her eyes. What's the matter? She drags me across the street, and there's a bird lying on the ground with a busted wing and two cats that are going in and out of the bushes waiting for the right opportunity. And she wouldn't budge until I got a box, put the bird in, and called animal control. And she said to me, I see what you mean now. I see who your daughter is. That you have to find a way to make yourself be memorable, because whenever you're pitching, always remember that the people you're pitching to are looking at two things. One, the quality of your idea, whether it's a novel, a screenplay, or a business idea. And they're looking for the quality of the idea. Will it further their purposes? But the other thing they're looking at is, would I like to be in business with this person? Would this person be nice to work with? And so again, if you're showing that you're a good listener as well as a good presenter, if you're interested in what they're saying, if you're trying to accommodate to them, that's a lot better. If they make suggestions and you get defensive, oh, they're already running the other way. So a lot of this is you're selling yourself along with your project.
Now, you know, in your book, you have chapters by chapter, and you have all of these different areas for people to think about. And that's what Carrie got the book. That's the girl who was asking me this question. Mm-hmm. And she got the book, and she's working up, as she told me, she's working up on the setup and structuring the pitch. And her idea, and this is sort of a funny idea, I'm sure many people have thought of it, but nobody ever asked me. So her idea is that she'd have this perfect pitch, thanks to you, and she would go to Hollywood and sit around like the Beverly Hills Hotel, and then everybody she saw, she would give this pitch to. I'm not sure if that will exactly work, but it's an interesting concept, but I think she better get to the end of the book before she does this.
And take a little course in probability theory and ratios. Not probably the best strategy to use.
But talking about getting to knowing the people, well, first of all, this is another question from an author. His name is Ken, and he has two questions. One, he says, how do you find these people to pitch to? And two, do you do training yourself? Do you help train people how to do a pitch? Do you have like...
It's so much fun for us to do that, yes. And finding people to pitch to is that's probably one of the most difficult parts, and that's why God made friends. You know, I think it's important to use contacts wherever possible, and one of the ways to do that is networking. So again, you want to talk, if you're a writer, you want to look for any place where you can meet other writers, editors, anybody connected with the literary industry. If you're a screenwriter, again, you're looking at anybody who's ever been on a movie set who can help you make a contact. But the point is, most of this is going to be done through knowing somebody. And I remember there was one of my favorite book titles years ago. Somebody wrote a book about networking, and the title was Never Eat Lunch Alone. And a brilliant title. You're always, you know, writing query letters to people if you're a writer is something you have to do, but going through the front door is always more difficult than if you can go through the back door and have contacts. And it's a matter of talking to anybody you can, meeting as many people as you can. But Jeffrey, do you want to tell the story about Gene Roddenberry?
Oh, it's my favorite story, and unfortunately, it had to be cut from the book because we didn't have room for it. But the great Gene Roddenberry was not always the great Gene Roddenberry. He had been a fighter pilot during World War II. He came to Hollywood in the early 1950s. Boy, Peter, I hope I'm telling the right story. There's so many about him. He's the Star Trek maven. But at any rate, he was a Los Angeles beat cop, and he was also writing PR. And he kept telling everyone he
for the police department.
Oh, yes. And what did I say? Oh, yeah.
It's perfect.
Did I say the sheriff's department? So he told everybody that he ran into, I want to be a writer. I want to write for television. You have to remember, this is the very early days of television. It's mostly anthology series. And everybody says, well, you need an agent. And he says, how do you get an agent? Says, well, I don't know. You have to know somebody. Well, he was a cop, and he had what in those days they used was the reverse phone book, and he found a cop on his beat. Found an agent on his feet, and he just found out where this guy lived, and he followed him around And if he got, he was waiting for him to do something wrong and make an illegal stop or something. And he got tired of waiting. He pulled the guy over, got around to the front of the guy's car. He knew he was an agent already. And he said, "I'm sorry I had to stop you. I'm sorry I have to write up this ticket. Of course, it's not the kind of writing I want to do." And the agent said, what kind of writing do you want to do? And he said, "Well, I really like to work in television." And the agent said, "Well, I'm an agent. Maybe I can help you." And 3 weeks later, they're sitting in a conference room in the middle of summer. There's no air conditioning. It's Mr. Alcoa, the studio executive, and the network executive. And for your listeners who don't know this, in those days, the sponsor had the real power to say yes or no. So it was Alcoa. And he took off his jacket and he was walking around the room. No, his agent is there and he's telling this story for the anthology series. And he stops and the network guy says, "Love it." And the person from the studio, "Absolutely love it. We'd love to buy it." And they both look to Mr. Alcoa and Mr. Alcoa says, "Great. You have your agent call the studio and make a deal." And Roddenberry puts his coat back on and they're walking out. And he says, "That was way too easy. Is it always like that?" And the agent says, "No, but they've probably never had anybody pitch to them with a gun before."
And you cut that story? That's too beautiful. That should have been chapter one.
We were devastated. But we were asked to cut 75,000 words out of the book.
So, wasn't that much.
Whatever it was, I'm not good at math, but I love that story. And of course, Gene Roddenberry then went on. People don't know this. Lucille Ball was the one who actually, when she was running Desilu, was the one who heard the pitch for Star Trek and bought it. When the original Star Trek went off the air, Gene Roddenberry was not a billionaire the way he died. He was back to writing series and figuring out what to do. And then when in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, when all the sequels came, that's when he became a billionaire. And I just love that he was a cop, though. I love that part. So you just don't know. And that's maybe the second best pitch story in the book. The story about the dog and Larry Bresner, I think, is the best story. I told Peter I wanted to call it. I wanted to use the Larry Bresner story. I think we told you the Larry Bresner story, did we not?
Well, go ahead and tell it again.
I would never think of telling this story because Larry was one of Peter's closest friends. So go ahead, Peter. It's a great pit story.
This was truly a classic. He was called into New Line Cinema to pitch, and Stu Miller went with him. He's the fellow that wrote Throw Mama from the Train. And Larry was both a manager and a producer, and one of his major clients was Billy Crystal. So they're in there pitching the head of New Line Cinema, who had a big German Shepherd, who he took everywhere. He had doctor's notes, so he could take him on planes, he could take him at restaurants. And so they're going through the pitch, and all of a sudden he says, "Look, you got to excuse me for a couple of minutes, I've got to make a call." As he's at the door about to walk out, he says, "Keep pitching." Which basically he's saying is, "Pitch to my dog." So he walks out, and the two of them look at each other and say, "We're supposed to pitch the dog? Well, are we being punked? Is there a camera in here? We're going to be on some weird TV show with us." And he said, "What the heck? Let's pitch the dog." And so they started pitching to the dog. The guy comes back in another 5 minutes or so. He finishes up the pitch, and they bought the movie. And it got made and even had a sequel. If you've ever seen the movie Ride Along, that was the movie.
You guys are too great. You know, you are terrific. I have to tell you this, because my listeners just love you, and I know by the time I get home, I will have lots of emails. I want to ask you if you will make this a habit to come on Joy on Paper. Let's do a program with you every 3 months. And then I was
will only do that if you invite us.
Oh, well, I will invite you, and and I tell you,
I don't know, Patsy. I don't know. You'd have to hold my arm behind my back. I don't know.
Well, we'll just have to call it that we're going to do lunch. We're going to do an early lunch at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday, and you're going to come to the program and talk to my listeners. There are many more questions. I do want to, before I let you go, because I am actually going to talk to another author after you, and the reason I'm going to talk to her is she's written a book called Murder on Hollywood Beach, and her name is Carol Finezza, and I thought that would be a fun follow-up. I'm going to talk to her in a little while, but I do want to say, and this is, you know, this is the wonderful thing about being able to talk to you, and, you know, Florida is the home for all of those people who escaped New York. Right? And so, so you know, here in Clearwater, Florida, I would say maybe we have 10% of the people are from New York City. So they go, you can go around, and you're always hearing a Brooklyn accent somewhere. But one of my listeners, and her name is Edith, and she says, I'm not pitching anything, but I got the book because she listens to me, and she buys every book. She loves my program, and I think she buys every the book from every author who's been on the program for 7 years.
Smart woman.
What she wrote about is she wrote that she used to go to the Catskills, and she went, for the Borscht Belt Resort, and she went to Laurel's Country Club, which you. So she wanted me to say a special, special hello to Peter. Because she was there many times from the time she said when she thinks she was like 5 years old the first time they went, and they went until she was a teenager.
Oh, that's so sweet. She probably saw Larry there.
Probably. So that was a very famous Borscht Belt location.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's where he learned comedy, was sitting there every night watching those Borscht Belt comics.
Right. If you watch, there's the second season of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. It all takes place in the Catskills, and it's all, I believe it's supposed to be the Laurel. It looks like the pictures of the... I mean, they reconstructed it. It's well worth watching. They reconstructed it beautiful the way they did it. And it's a really great period, and it's not, hasn't had the, it's well known, but I don't know, we talk about burlesque, we talk about vaudeville, but we don't talk as much about how many people got their start in the Borscht Belt.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about that more the next time you come on, which is not going to be too long from now. We'll plan it, we'll set it up, and I was hoping, I'm just starting a fantastic new website, and maybe you'll do a blog post for me, and let's tell this story. Let's tell a few of your good stories you can share on my blog, okay?
That would be wonderful. Thank you so much.
Okay, well, I just want to tell everyone, Pitch Like Hollywood, What You Can Learn from the High Stakes Film Industry, by two fantastic authors, Peter Desberg and Jeffrey Davis. You can use what you learn in this book, whether you are pitching your book for a film or you are starting a business. There is so much to learn from this book, and it's just a fun book, sort of an insider's look at Hollywood. It's just a fun book, and I want to thank both of you for being on today, and I'm going to see you 3 months from today. How about that?
Absolute pleasure.
Okay, we'll do lunch.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now. Bye. Oh, wow. They are so sweet. We're going to hold commercials, Ed, until the end, because I know that... Carol is on the phone, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Carol, you heard the end of that interview I had there?
I loved it. All I can say is where were Peter and Jeffrey when I needed them?
Well, they are there in Hollywood, and they are, you never know, because you've got a heck of a book to pitch yourself here. So let me just make sure I have your name right. It's Carol, and you pronounce it Finitza? Finitza?
Finitza like pizza.
Ah, Finitza like pizza. That's an easy one to remember. And I hear, you know, I have heard from your publicist. Just want to say that Kim Dower says that you are a good talker and you can talk a lot. So I am actually going to let you talk a lot because I have a sore throat, which is due to you. You caused this sore throat, and it is really very painful because I read your book first when she sent it months ago, and then I reread it the other day just to make sure that I knew everything. And this morning... reading here about somebody who believes in organizing, you can hear my voice is getting rough because I decided to pull things out of my closet. My bedroom is now a complete, absolute, utter mess. And I was coming out of the bathroom and I was swishing around my mouthwash, a really nice new brand. It tastes really good. It doesn't taste good because I stubbed my toe on a box and I swallowed the mouthwash. And it is still burning. It's burning my throat. And I drank chocolate milk. I thought that would be the most soothing, but it's still burning. So I'm going to let you do a lot of the talking. Okay, I did enough.
Great.
The only thing I will say is that when I got to the third sentence, which I love. And I'm going to read it out loud so people can hear it because my voice is going, but I can read this sentence. I'm in my closet, buried in a pile of cashmere sweaters, wool crew necks, and cotton pullovers. And it was the cashmere sweaters that got me. I didn't wear cashmere that much, but my sister loved cashmere. And I used to buy her cashmere sweaters. And I just loved it. She had like a rainbow of cashmere sweaters. And I loved the feel of them, but I never actually wore them. But she had them, and so it reminded me of that. And what a wonderful way to open a book. Very, very good. I loved it. It really got me hooked.
Thank you.
So now I'm leaving it to you. Tell us about this character. She is a little bit of an organizer.
Yeah, Amanda Beckwith is a great character. She was inspired by my daughter, Kelly, and... She's a bit of a mess, both Amanda and my daughter. Really, really hyper-organized in their way of sort of putting together a home and a closet and that. But in their personal life, they cannot manage it. I found out that my daughter had a drinking problem, and I tried to fix it, and there's just no way to fix it. And so I envisioned or imagined this character, Amanda, who, but for her drinking, would had a great life. But because of her drinking, she found she had a messy divorce. Her friends abandoned her. She had to what she considered minor arrest, drinking while riding her bike under the influence, and then hitting her husband on the head with her ex-husband on the head with a baguette.
So a baguette. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, and she spent time in anger management classes. So now the book opens up where Amanda's just getting her feet on the ground. She's starting to get, you know, reconnect with some of her friends. getting, having a better relationship with her mother. When one night, late at night, she hears something. She thinks somebody's breaking into her house, and it's not that. It's her ex-husband's wife, who was found murdered on the beach behind Amanda's house. And so Amanda reverts to her old tactics. Like, instead of just being forthright, she starts trying to cover up for the mistakes she made previously leading up to this discovery of this, you know, of Bree, her ex-husband's massage therapist, who's found on the beach. So she lies about where she was on the night of the murder. She's building one lie upon another to the police because she's afraid of her boss, because she lied about where she was. She was supposed to be working a job, and instead she's cleaning out her closet and embarrassed because that's what she's doing, you know, a week before Christmas when she should be out, you know, having a great time with all her friends. So it's kind of a story that about a woman who's trying to figure out who she is and how she can get herself out of this mess that she created for herself.
So now, when you came out with this idea for the character, and I like the one of the things she's writing a blog about,
yeah,
about which is called the Messy Girl Blog, and so this whole idea of OCD, how did that grab you?
I mentioned my daughter was sort of spiraling out of control in her life. My husband had just been diagnosed with cancer. And I'm trying to manage all this, like create order and chaos. And what I think helped me as a writer, and a wannabe fiction writer at the time, was what I couldn't do to help my daughter or my husband, I could create this character who could work through these really heavy problems and see light at the end of the tunnel. So she was a neat freak. She overthinks everything, but the ground beneath her feet is just collapsing. And there was a sort of a paradox between the two of, I've got it all together, but I really don't. My whole life is falling apart. And the harder she tries, and I think this is really something I learned from experiencing the life of a person with a serious disease, is alcoholism, is they're constantly trying to cover their tracks because they're embarrassed or ashamed, and they're just digging a deeper and deeper hole for themselves. So I think it was very mentally helpful for me while I was sitting in waiting rooms for my husband, and just imagining this woman with this all these problems, but unlike my daughter, thank God she's okay today, but at the time Amanda is coming to terms with the reason that she's in this dark place in her life. It's not about her parents. They can't rescue her. Her friends can't rescue her. The police are after her because of the things she's done. She has to come to terms with that. she has to finally become real and be honest with herself and find her way out of this.
And become her own sleuth. Become a sleuth to solve her own mystery.
Yeah. Well, and life is a mystery. That was the thing. Like, everything about real life is just such a mystery.
When you first wrote your book, did you have, you had connections already in the writing world?
Yeah, but you know what? Yeah, you do have, you know, I was listening. I came in from the front door in the beginning, and it's very daunting for any writers who are listening. I feel their pain because you send out these query letters and you write them and rewrite them and hone in on every little word and you massage it down, your entire book down to like 300 words to catch the potential agent's eye. And it's really, really tough. And so for a long time, my book was picked up by Penguin, which was great. Like, I was on top of the world. But they held on to it for a year before they rejected it. And for whatever reason, there's no really, you know, they don't go and tell you, well, we liked it, but we don't like it anymore. But then during COVID, I decided to go in the back door and kind of take like from Jeffrey, you know, who do I know? Like, who do I know? And a very dear friend of mine, Nancy Boyarski, an executive from ARCO, the gas company, she had finished her ninth novel. She was after retirement, very talented woman. So I called her and I just asked her, you know, I asked her to read my book. And then after she read it, I just said, what's your best advice to me? And she made an introduction to her publisher. And, you know, you have to go through the traditional kind of send a query and chapters of your book. But after they accepted it, you know, it was just like a miracle.
Well,
COVID miracle.
A COVID miracle. And we needed him. Well, you've done a great job. It's called Murder on Hollywood Beach, The Messy Girl Murder Series. So we're going to have more of them. Good. By Carol Finizza. And tell us, do you have a website you want people to go to?
It's called CarolFinizzaAuthor.com.
Okay, and they can follow you on Facebook probably?
Facebook and Instagram.
Okay, again, the name is Murder on Hollywood Beach. It's a great title, and it was so nice that it worked out just perfectly with a Pitch Like Hollywood book today.
Yeah.
Well, you did a great job, and
I'm
very happy, and I want to thank Kim so much for, as always, she is the best publicist, and you've got a
world.
Oh, the best, and she's going to get you in a lot of places, and it's been fun to talk to you. And so I'm not too mad that I stubbed my toe because of you today. Okay? You take care.
Okay, Kathy. Thank you.
Great talking to you. Bye-bye now. Bye. You know, it's fun. Two Hollywood books in a row. Isn't that funny how these things just happen? I get two books, and both with the name Hollywood in it, and reminds me of Hollywood, and my days there. And which also is a terrifying thing, which reminds me of Larson and Larson. So we're going to play the commercials, and Larson and Larson, why I have our legal eagle, Bill Larson, come in into here to Joy on Paper to remind you of legal problems before you pitch to Hollywood. You need a lawyer. Anyway, here we're going to play the commercials, and then let's end the program with the book buzz from Rita Moreau. Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Carol J. Perry's Till Death. The books in Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mysteries are so vivid that you feel as if you are right there in Salem, Massachusetts. It might come from the fact that Carol was born there on Halloween Eve. You are invited to a wedding in Till Death, book 12 in this bewitching series. The staff at WICH-TV is looking forward to the wedding of their program director, Lee Barrett, to Detective Sergeant Pete Mondello, who have been a hot item for a long time. Lee is busy tying up loose ends before the big day. It'll be an adjustment moving out of her apartment in Aunt Ibby's house, but the couple are moving a few doors down to stay nearby. After all, they have to share custody of Orion, their clairvoyant cat. After the celebration, complete with a cake made by the TV station magician, Lee and Pete are looking forward to their getting to their honeymoon destination, Pirate Island in Maine. The newlyweds don't realize that soon they will be opening a mystery that hits very close to home for Lee Barrett, the death of Lee's parents 30 years earlier. There's lots of intrigue and suspense as Lee and Pete's honeymoon ends up being more eventful than they anticipated. And Lee has to put their wedding gifts aside and turns to her psychic gifts instead. If the Mondellos want to enjoy their honeymoon, they will have to wrap up crimes both past and present. Meanwhile, Aunt Ibby, a feisty former librarian who is a computer whiz, is planning to rent out Lee's old apartment. But she's getting some bad vibes from her prospective tenant. As always, Carol J. Perry's writing is rich and multi-layered. She has a talent for introducing intriguing new characters, and in this book, readers get to meet Lee's extended family, even if they are quite odd and possibly murderers. A great read with some psychic witchery vibes, and of course, Orion, the cat with a cool personality. Be a guest at the wedding. Pre-order Carol J. Perry's Till Death. Do it now. It will be released this spring on April 26th, and be ready for a thrilling and poignant adventure in this latest Witch City Mystery series. Another great book from Kensington Publishing.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.